Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now open session pursuant to adjournment. Master Commissioner Robert Mayer presiding.
Please be seated. We have five arguments scheduled for this morning, and we will, in the interest of everyone's comfort, interpose a brief recess after the third argument. That'll be after case number 2014-852 and before case number 2014-883. The first case is 2014-828, Rite Aid of Ohio versus Washington County Board of Revision. And Ms. Gorey will present the argument from the seated position.
Thank you very much. May it please the court, I'm Kelly Gorey of Rich and Gillis Law Group. I thank the court for its accommodation this morning due to my back surgery. This case involves a Rite Aid that was built in 1999. It's located in Marietta, Ohio. It is, as of the applicable lien date, which is tax year 2010, it was occupied by Rite Aid. The both parties presented appraisals to the Board of Tax Appeals. There are huge distinctions between these appraisals. The Board of Tax Appeals, essentially in a boilerplate decision, accepted the appraisal of Rite Aid, which valued the property at about $1.1 million, which was about a $2 million reduction from the auditor's original valuation. The county appellees pursued the appeal to the court, contending that the Supreme Court's decision in Meyer versus Franklin County Board of Revision should apply to the valuation of what we would call this store as a mini big box. And the first reason why we believe that Meyer applies is that this court has actually held on two occasions that the sales of leased fee national drugstores do in fact constitute true value and should not be adjusted to reflect what was argued was an above market rent. And this was the same predicate as to what happened in Meyer. The court had held that sales do not need to be adjusted to reflect above market encumbrances, and it must follow then if a sale of what appraisers would deem a leased fee constitutes true value, an appraiser is not at liberty to completely ignore these sales when valuing a property that is occupied and will be occupied in the foreseeable future.
Isn't the significant difference to Meyer, though? Didn't the court affirm the BTA's decision in Meyer?
Yes.
And rejecting the idea that the particular comparables that were used and the way they were used created some kind of legal error?
Yes, but in affirming the Board of Education's appraisal there, their appraiser adopted a blended approach, which included and primarily relied upon first-generation data, which would have included the lease fee sales or the build-to-suit sales. Meyer's appraiser, Mr. Lorms, had deliberately excluded consideration of any first-generation data on the basis that once the original occupant of the property vacated, there was significant obsolescence, and it would sell for much less than what the property was valued as to Meyer.
But isn't the question of which sales to use and so forth essentially a part of the fact finding in terms of what the value of the property is?
Yes.
And to apply Meyer then as some sort of a legal precept would then have this court become the super BTA that it seeks to not become.
Yes, I see what you're saying, but I think that this court is very well at liberty to reverse the Board of Tax Appeals when a legal error has been made. And our contention is that the BTA misapplied Meyer. In one of its footnotes, it held that while Meyer indicates that lease fee sales may be used in an analysis, it does not hold that an appraiser has to use only lease fee sales. We believe that is a misapplication of Meyer. We believe that Meyer holds that when the property is in fact occupied and will be occupied in the foreseeable future by its first generation occupant, that an appraiser is not at liberty to completely ignore all of the first generation data, which is what Mr. Hatcher did in this case. And we believe that in reality, the property is a special purpose property. It is a specific prototype developed by Rite Aid. Its designs don't vary much across all locations. Both appraisers testified that the three national drugstore retailers do not like to occupy another's property. They all build their own to their exact specifications. And the evidence of what it costs to build these properties is relevant. And there's ample data in Ms. Blosser's report of what Rite Aid is willing to pay for the construction of the property, because it then leases that back through a build-to-suit arrangement. And she has data in her report revealing that Rite Aid has paid as low as $15 a square foot to as much as $33 a square foot in terms of rent. And that's right in line also with what Walgreens and CVS would pay. And a central holding of Meyer is that when a property is essentially unique and highly useful to the occupants who built it, that if not considering the value to Rite Aid itself, that owner is escaping property tax liability. And that was discussed in the context of a special purpose property. And the court also noted, which I think I mentioned in my brief, the case of Higbee. And Higbee was a situation where it was a department store, and the owner was arguing that the property should be reduced in value because it was failing to meet its own sales projections. And when the court discussed Higbee and Meyer, it held that it did not apply because it was not a situation where the special design of the property was extremely useful and helpful to Rite Aid, but it did not greatly increase its marketability after Rite Aid would have vacated and sold the property. And we believe that that's exactly what the evidence reveals here, that once the original occupant vacates and resells the property, it sells for, you know, approximately a third of what it would sell for if Rite Aid or the original first-generation tenant were still occupying the property. And that's essentially exactly the same as what the court considered in Meyer.
With the exception that in Meyer, the court was allowing the fact finder to find all of these facts and decide which of the appraisers had the right approach and,
yes,
and all of the matters that you're reciting, which would ordinarily be part of the fact finding.
Yes, but I think here that it's clear that the BTA actually failed to re-review the appraisals and read the BTA transcript prior to issuing its decision. Its central finding was that Mr. Hatcher's sales comparables and rent comparables were more comparable to the subject property, we're contending is an abuse of discretion. The sales comparables that Mr. Hatcher used were either multi-tenant inline retail spaces, or they were single-tenant older properties. Not one single one was a pharmacy or a drugstore. For his rent comps, he solely relied upon the inline spaces in a neighborhood commercial center. He deliberately excluded consideration of the property as a freestanding pharmacy in its first generation use. And it's our contention that Meyer prohibits that. And even though the BTA found that they were more comparable, they can't be comparable as a matter of law because Meyer prohibits that conclusion.
What's your view of the disposition of this case? If the court accepted your argument, would it go back for more fact-finding or?
I think there's two options. I think that the court could agree with the county entirely and hold that Ms. Blosser's report fully complies with Meyer in that it considered both first generation and second generation data, and it could remand with instruction to the BTA to accept the Blosser appraisal, or there was ample data here between both appraisal reports for the BTA to actually do its duty to independently determine value. It certainly could have utilized some data from both reports in the event that it determined that Ms. Blosser's appraisal didn't consider enough second generation data. It could have used a combination of some of Mr. Hatcher's data and some of Ms. Blosser's data to independently arrive at its own value. So I believe that the court could also remand to the BTA with instruction that it at least consider the Blosser appraisal and give the first generation data some consideration and independently arrive at a valuation that perhaps would be a mix of both appraisals. The final point that I wanted to mention, and I think I've touched on this before, is that the Mr. Hatcher's sole argument for excluding any first-generation data was because he adheres to the appraiser's definition of what constitutes a fee simple and what constitutes a least fee appraisal. This distinction not only was rejected in Meyer, but has also been subsequently rejected by the court on several occasions. Another one is the case of Hinn 2. Mr. Hatcher's testimony is nearly identical to Mr. Lorm's testimony in Meyer, that the fee simple cannot be considered as if there were a lease on the property. And what the court in Meyer said is that if you're looking at fee simple sales as including a lease to the first generation occupant, which the court had repeatedly held, that it follows that an appraiser, when valuing a first generation property in its first generation use, with no indication that it will be converted, or that Rite Aid was going to vacate the property, that it's proper for an appraiser to look at what Rite Aid itself would not only be willing to pay to construct the property, but also to lease it back. And so what Ms. Blosser did that fully complies with Meyer is that she looked at what Rite Aid was willing to pay for other stores all across the state and took that into consideration. It wasn't her sole consideration, but she valued it as if it was a national freestanding drugstore in first generation use. Thank you very much. That's all I have.
Thank you, Ms. Gari. Mr. Swaim, did I pronounce your name correctly, sir?
You did.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. As both briefs pointed out, we have no discrepancy with the basic underlying facts of this particular case. The county's argument relies very extensively upon the Myers case, so I'd like to do just a speck of review of that particular case as I read the case. First of all, the two appraisers in that case, Mr. Kuhn, Mr. Lorms, both qualified appraisers, had different approaches to value. Mr. Kuhn, in that particular case, appraising for the school board. There was a brand new Myers that was only 5 months old as of tax lien date when the value was being contested. That's a great difference from this case where the property is 10 years old. It was built as a special purpose building for Myers at the time, and it was also noted that it would be hard to reconfigure at that point in time. Even with those criteria and the actual construction costs, the BTA, first of all, did not go to the actual construction costs of that brand new building. That's implied in the decision by the fact that the school board made the argument that the construction costs should be utilized, and the BTA instead relied upon the income and sales comparison approach, implying that the construction costs were higher. Now, I do not have that information in front of me, but from the decision itself, it appears that that was a higher value that the school board was arguing for, and the BTA was not willing to go along with that. In addition, Mr. Kuhn, for this brand new building, did a blend of first generation, second generation value. Even though it was new, he didn't go strictly with first generation. He stepped down even from that level. So he's not up at construction costs. He's not even at first generation. He's in between. And this is for a five-month-old building. This is a very significant factual distinction. In Ms. Blosser's appraisal, she makes no distinction as to first generation, second generation, even if you accept the arguments of the county here. Her value, in fact, is for the lease rates that would have been entered into. If it had been leased brand new, it's higher than the average rents paid during the time during which it was built by her own appraisal. She also makes a big assumption within her appraisal itself, and that if these are built to suit, that they're built by an outside person and leased out to recover the construction costs. That's not always the case, and in this particular situation, it definitely would not be the case. In this case, the right hand to Rite Aid built the building. Any subsequent sale release is not based upon the construction cost, but based upon the lease rates that they are going to establish and the term of the lease, because it's the cash flow off the lease that generates most of the value in the sale. And she makes the assumption that all these comparables that she's cited, which are only the three big drugstore chains, all the costs reported as the sale are based upon the construction costs alone. And that's not a correct assumption unless you look at each individual sale and see what underlied that sale. So even accepting counsel's argument, which we do not, Ms. Blosser's appraisal is flawed in that she's making basic underlying assumptions with no data and factual description as to the underlying original sale leasebacks. They're trying to bootstrap a sale leaseback from another party, which may not have reflected market at the time, into reflecting a fair market value for another property, and bootstrap the value up accordingly, not according to what the underlying value of that property was.
What about the claim that there's an abuse of discretion in adopting what the appraisal of the Hatcher appraisal that Rite Aid offered?
This was argued very well, I thought, at the Board of Tax Appeals. And Mr. Hatcher went through his appraisal methodology, and it's very clear that he utilized local sales, local comparables. He did not think that remote in time or remote in location sales applied for this particular older used property. It's not a new property, it's an older property. Now, if this was brand new, as in the Myers case, 5 months after tax lien date, then I think council would have an argument. Not one I'd necessarily agree with, but would have an argument. Because Ms. Blosser's appraisal methodology was still flawed. And the Board of Tax Appeals, as this board knows, is aware of, has been given great discretion by this court as to how to weigh the appraisal evidence that's presented to it. There have been a long line of cases on that very matter. And in this particular case, the Board of Tax Appeals looked at both appraisals, and these issues were brought out at the trial level. And they did not obviously deem Ms. Blosser's appraisal credible. It's not even credible under the Myers case, because the distinction that Mr. Kuhn drew in that case, she did not even apply in this case. If the board would go or force, if this court would force the board to go with Ms. Blosser's appraisal, it's extending way beyond what Meyer said. And we do not believe that that is appropriate or justified in this particular case. Both appraisers also, it would be interesting to note in this particular case, noted in their appraisals, and I believe both on the stand, that the three different large drugstores, because their credit worthiness, have very different capitalization rates that they obtain when they do a sale leaseback transaction. This would mean that, for example, $1 million property, cost to construct $1 million property, CVS would pay one price because the lease rates would indicate that. Walgreens would pay a different price, and Rite Aid would pay an entirely different price, and Rite Aid being the least creditworthy of the three, according to both appraisers, would actually have to pay higher lease rates because the higher risk being taken on, or would get a much lower price for their real estate. And Ms. Blosser in her appraisal doesn't do that adjustments, although she talks about that issue. She doesn't do any adjustments in her appraisal for that difference for the very same property, very same cost to construct between the three different owners. Basically, the school board would have us say that Rite Aid should be valued the same as a Walgreens property, even though they're going to have to pay a higher lease rate or get less money for their property. And Ms. Blosser had the data, it's in her report, to make those adjustments, and she did not. It's a very flawed appraisal that she presented. The one large underlying issue in this is for an older property such as this. Ms. Blosser relies virtually exclusively upon sale leaseback transactions. She quotes a local broker as to what he thinks a local property would rent for, but she comes in above his number for this property. She does not go out into the market and look at anything other than sale leaseback properties. Not a single other property. There are other properties all throughout the southeast quadrant of Ohio. She did not talk about a single other property in the southeast quadrant of Ohio. Not a sale, not a lease. Her only comment is this local broker's opinion of value. We believe that the BTA correctly weighed the two appraisals. It disregarded Ms. Blosser's appraisal because of these flaws and relied upon the value derived by Mr. Hatcher. The value of a property in Ohio has generally been what the fair market value of the real estate should be. And in doing that, the court also has a long series of cases where you look at the current lease rates in determining what that is, not 20 year ago lease rates that were taken on, and not even 15 or 5 years ago, but current lease rates. That's determined by the local market and the local property that's involved. Again, Myers, brand new, built to spec, as described, special purpose, hard to change, and even at that, the BTA did not go with the construction costs, which may have been, for a special use property, may have been a more accurate representation of what Myers actually had into it than the numbers derived by Mr. Kuhn.
Thank you, Mr. Swaim. Ms. Gorey, you've reserved a minute 49 seconds.
Okay, thank you very much. A couple quick points. Rite Aid alleges that Ms. Glosser did not consider any second generation data in her report. In fact, she does consider second generation data, particularly in the sales comparison approach. She has three a CVS and two Rite Aids where CVS and Rite Aid have vacated. That is on page Roman 6-2. The second point was made about the age of the property. Ms. Blosser's comparables, when she testified at the Board of Tax Appeal, her primary search criteria was for the age that the property was built. All of her comparables were between 1995 and 2001. Subject property was built in 1999. And in each one of those cases, the property was still subject to the original 20 or 25 year lease, as the subject property would have been if it were a lease property. And then final comment about the local market and Ms. Blosser's, the allegation that Ms. Blosser didn't consider the local market. For each of her sales, she made extremely specific adjustments. She considered the local median area income. She considered the traffic count right in front of the subject property. And she also considered the population around each sale. She adequately adjusted to be similar to the subject property's location. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Gorey. This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision.